Welcome back for those who we saw yesterday, and welcome for new people who are here today. What we saw yesterday was a portrait of Miriam, also of Yocheved, but especially of Miriam, as one who stands up for what she believes in, as one who is strong, as one who really has the future of Am Yisrael in her gun sight, so to speak, right? And really wants to make sure that the future of Am Yisrael will be secured. And she really is a representative of Am Yisrael, the women in Am Yisrael, not an anomaly, right? But really part of the representational group, right, of other women in Am Yisrael. And we compared it, right, to Hagar, right? And what would be, right, the usual pool, right, let's say of the Nashim Mitzriot. And we also saw how Bat Paro, the daughter of Paro, was really a tikkun, was really a manifestation of the change that was happening, right, even within the women of Mitzrayim, and that Bat Paro is really representational, right, of this change, and maybe, according to the Midrash, as we saw, this change really shows that Bat Paro was really a convert, really changing to the new idea, right, and philosophy of Benot Yisrael, of the women in Am Yisrael. We also saw, right, that not only were they instructive and instrumental in the beginning, right, when Bnei Yisrael had to really change from this mode of depression and oppression and really start to get out of the abyss, right, of oppression and really come to Geula, go forward towards redemption. We also see after the redemption, right, the women were instrumental, right, in giving Shevach v'Hoda'ah, in really recognizing this amazing event that took place, which means they were in tune already with this idea of Geula. What's fascinating in the Midrash is that the Midrash really takes the step beyond what we see in the Pshat and wants to emphasize, right, the role of the Nashim, which means it's the women who are really focused on Geula and looking forward, and we see that that's their special quality. What I'd like to emphasize and start with today is the idea of Miriam's speech. What is it, right, and what is her hallmark, which is really what we touched upon in the end, and I'd really like to start with today. We're going to go back to our shot, but I really want to emphasize some of the themes that we see in the Midrash, as we see in the Gemara. So we're going to start with reading part of number 8. Let's go to number 8, Talmud Bavli, the Gemara, that's on page 3, Masechet Sotah Daf Yud Aleph Amud Bet. And what I'd like to read are the last few lines that talk about their names, which means we said and we know that Perek Bet is Yocheved and Miriam, because eventually we know that they're the mother and the sister, right, and the wife. But the question is, what about Perek Aleph? Even if you read Pshat in Perek Aleph, right, the Mialdot, the midwives, they are, right, the women who help give birth to everyone in Am Yisrael. But the Midrash says something very interesting, which we all know, but I want you to see it inside, because there's one piece that's very important to us. So we're going to read from the beginning, right? Ukshenigla Kodesh Baruch Hu, and when Hashem appeared to Bnei Yisrael on the water, the women and the children recognized Hashem first. Why? Because they were the ones who were involved in the preparation, in the everyday activities of thinking about the future. So the women and the children recognized Hashem first. And the Midrash asks this very question, who were these Mialdot? So Rav and Shmuel have a debate. One says it's a mother and daughter-in-law, and one says it's a mother and daughter. And we know, what's the most popular rendition that we say?
Mother and daughter.
Mother and daughter. Yocheved and Miriam. Now, why did that become so popular? Number one, because we'll see it repeated in many, many Midrashim. But this is a very important point. Rashi is a very influential parshan. He's a very influential commentator. Rashi, Rav Shlomo Yitzchaki, he is in the 11th century in Ashkenaz, right, in northern France. And what he does is very interesting. He does give you a pshat perush, a simple explanation of the text. But really, more often than not, what Rashi does is he brings in midrashim. He brings in the words of the chachamim, of the rabbis, because he wants you to read the Torah through the eyes of the rabbis. So what's the idea that we always say Rashi is a pashtan? Because Rashi usually brings in the midrashim that will go with the flow of the meaning of the text. But the idea that you could think, right, that automatically that Avraham went into the Kivshana Esh, into the burning furnace, it's not in Pshat at all. But which Parshan brings it? Rashi, right? Who tells us that Shifra and Pua are really Yocheved and Miriam? Rashi brings it in. Now, of course, as we see, what is he quoting? The Midrashim, which means Rashi wants you to read Chumash through the eyes of Chazal, and he wants to show you how it fits with the words in the text. So he's not making up these Midrashim. He's bringing you the Midrashim of Chazal. But what he's doing is he wants you to read the Torah through the eyes of Chazal. So the question is, so what do you learn from the fact? What's the moral lesson? What's the idea that Rashi wants you to get out of the fact of reading the Torah through the eyes of Chazal? So let's read this Gemara, which means Rashi gives you parts of the Midrashim, but he doesn't give you all the Midrashim, right? So what you have to do many times is go back to the Midrash and see the bigger picture that Rashi is alluding to. Just like when someone speaks to you in like hints, and you understand what the person is saying, but you really, if someone else is hearing the conversation, what do they need? They need a perush. They need you to explain, what does it mean when you're mentioning certain things? If the in crowd knows what he means. So we're going to go to the original Midrash that Rashi explains, right, that Rashi takes this idea, right, of Shifra and Pua. So, Ditanya, I'm on line 3. Shifra is Yocheved, right? Velama nikra Shifra, which means we can't just say her name is Shifra, we have to give a reason. Shemeshaperet et havlad, she makes the baby beautiful. You know, when the baby comes out, the amniotic sac and all the fluid and everything, right? You have to clean up the baby. So Shifra's role was physically taking care of the baby and making it beautiful when it was born. Or, davar acher, Shifra, that Bnei Israel multiplied, pru urvu, Shifra pru urvu, that Bnei Israel multiplied during her time, because she was a midwife, helped Bnei Israel have many children, but we're more focused on Pua. What does Pua mean? We're on page 3, we're on number 8. Pua is Miriam. So why would Pua mean Miriam? V'lama nikra Pua, Shma Pua, why is her name Pua? Shehaita Pua umotsia et havlad. When she would help the mother give birth, she would scream and help the baby come out. In another Gemara, it says she would talk to the baby and bring the baby out. That was her job, which means, what does the Midrash want to say about Miriam? What is her hallmark? Speech, her mouth, as we saw last time. So now we see that the Midrash also wants to emphasize that, and that's important to us, because what are we going to speak about today? Her Lashon Hara, which means, if her hallmark is speech, does she lose the ability to be the spokeswoman, right, for Bnot Yisrael, or not? So because her hallmark is speech, we're going to see if she uses it well later, or not. What can we see about this idea that she is the mouthpiece? And not only does she speak to babies, right? Davar acher pua, shaita poa beruach hakodesh. She was speaking with nivuah, with prophecy, and she had the nivuah that her mother would give birth to a child, which means, what is a theme? And you prepared these today and yesterday. What are one of the themes that we see that the Midrash really wants to emphasize about Miriam? Speech, speech, speech. Says what she thinks. In the Pshat we saw, when Bat Paro is looking for someone for the child, who comes up and approaches her and speaks? Miriam. And how does she speak? She stands up for what she believes in. Boom. And she really speaks up. But in the Pshat it doesn't say anything about Miriam coming to her father to try to get them back together. That's a Midrash. So what we did today, from what you did today, what would really help us understand that Miriam not only speaks to babies and not only speaks about giving birth in the future, meaning what does Miriam use her speech for, what we see in the Pshat as well of what we did in Bamidbar? What does she use it for? What does she speak about? Okay, future, but in what we did in Bamidbar, what does she speak about? In Bamidbar. What? Okay, and in what area does she look for injustice? Family relations. Which means what we're going to see about Miriam, that whenever she speaks, it's about children or it's about family relationships. So the Midrash is going to take all these pieces together and say Miriam speaks, when she speaks about family issues, that's one of her great areas. Just like she told the parents to get back together, to have daughters, for them to be born, which means family issues. And what's the other side that she speaks about? Shirat Hayam. And what is Shirat Hayam all about?
Redemption.
Shevach v'hoda'a l'Hashem, which means praising Hashem, realizing God's greatness, which means her area is personal issues, speaking about personal issues, and also spiritual issues. which means she really combines those two areas. Who else combined those two areas according to the Midrash? Who did a lot of speaking, but spoke about religious issues and also was very into personal issues? Aaron. What do we see about Aaron in the Midrash? How is Aaron defined in the Midrash? Ohev Shalom, Rodef Shalom, Ohev et HaBriot u'mekarvan laTorah. Remember, these are not words in the Torah. This is the Midrash. It never tells us a story where Aaron goes to one person and says, oh, you know, Mr. X wants to become friendly with you, or your wife wants to get back together with you. Remember, in the Pshat, we don't have that, right? We don't have that in the Pshat. The Midrash portrays Aaron, number one, as a spiritual person. What does he do? He brings korbanot. He does kapara for Am Yisrael. And on the other hand, what does he do? He's very involved in interpersonal issues. But Moshe Rabbeinu, what is the main focus of Moshe Rabbeinu in Pshat, and also of what we know the Midrash speaks about him? How is Moshe portrayed? Yikov Adin?
He is the spiritual part, and that also explains why he complained about the Midrash, saying, what am I supposed to do with these people?
Okay, so what was Moshe's greatness?
The spiritual,
right? His main role was the spiritual, but what we see from our Perek in Bamidbar, and we're going to go through it, but I want you to get an introduction before we actually go through all the sources, and then when we see it, we already have a certain attitude. What is interesting about, though, how Moshe speaks about B'nai Yisrael? What is his relationship to Am Yisrael, per se? A parent relationship. Which means even though Moshe is the spiritual leader of Am Yisrael and he gives them Torah and Mitzvot and he chastises them, but his main role and relationship with Am Yisrael is as a parent. He said, Hashem, you sent me to be the parent of Am Yisrael. Which means Moshe's main role was to be the spiritual leader, but also the parent of Am Yisrael. Which means Miriam, who is so involved in family issues, Aharon, who's so involved in family issues of getting families together, but what really was Moshe to Am Yisrael? But he was their parent. Which means, so Miriam has her own family or is involved in families and gets them back together and is involved. Right? Aharon, right, is involved with getting families together, and we know he is married. What do we know about Aharon's future? What was Aharon able to see in the future of Am Yisrael, and what do we still have today from Aharon? The Kuhuna and Leviah, which means biologically, Aharon lives to this very day. And we all know the special studies that were done, right? The genetic testing that was done, that there really is a genetic link. Oh, all right, there you go. Okay? That there is a genetic link between the Kohanim families, right? So that shows that Aaron has this genetic continuity. He has continuity, right, through the Kohanim. Aaron is able to see his children take over, right? What do we know about Miriam? According to the Midrash, you read one of them yesterday, even though in the Pshat it doesn't tell us that Miriam got married. According to the Midrash, who does she marry? Caleb ben Yefuneh, and as a result, who comes out of her? David HaMelech. And today, almost all of us can, who's not a Kohen and Levi, right, can all trace our lineage close to or from David HaMelech, or at least Shevet Yehuda, right? But David HaMelech, a lot of people today can, my family can, I know here also people have Sefer Yuchasin, right, can trace their families all the way back, which means that David HaMelech also has continuity. Right? This kind of, and who really represents David HaMelech here in our issue? Miriam. Right? So Miriam has continuity throughout all the generations. Let's read number 9. Right? Gemara wants to emphasize this. What did it say? Right? Because the Mialdot feared Hashem, what did Hashem make for them? Batim. Houses. Right? What was the Pshat? We discussed this yesterday. What's the Pshat? Right? B'nai Yisrael were multiplying. That gave them satisfaction, that they were helping B'nai Yisrael continue. But what does the Midrash say? We all know this. Why do we know this? Because which Parshan brings this in the Chumash? Rashi. Which means that we almost identify this almost as Pshat, but this is Drash, but it's a famous Drash. Rashi wants us to understand from this whole piece. Vayihi ki yaruham yaldot et elokim, on number 9. Vayas lehem batim, he made them houses. Ravu Shmuel, you see, it's the same rabbis who spoke about Shifra Pua, which means in the base medrash, when they're discussing this, right, Ravu Shmuel are having this whole discussion about how do you explain all these prakim and chumash. So you have to understand, what is midrash? Midrash is a lot of times the discussion in the Beit Midrash that the Rabbanim had many years ago, right before actually it's written in the Midrash. But that's the Torah Shebal Peh, that's the oral law that we have. And what is Midrash? There are two ways to look at Midrash. One is Midrash is Parshanut. It's the Rabbanim looking at the Psukim and explaining them. And another aspect of Midrash is the idea of Mesorah, tradition. Which means, just like we have traditions in oral law where you look at the text and you can't understand the halakha if you didn't have this Mesorah of Torah Shebal Peh, Midrash also contains a lot of things that are Mesorah, which are handed down from generation to generation. So even though you don't see it as Perush in the text, right, it is Mesorah. Right, but the Midrash doesn't tell us all the time, this is a Mesorah and this is really a Parshanut of the Chachamim, using the same tools that they use for the halakha, they use for Agadah. But halakha is binding for us, right, in a praxis way, whereas Midrash is not binding in the same praxis way. Even though, of course, we accept the words of Chazak, the same Chachamim that are telling us the halakha, but there's more of a wide range. There's Shivim Panim La Torah, whereas in halakha, what do we have to always come down to? One way of practice, where in Midrash we have many views of Chazal, and many could say different things, like do we have to decide, is Shmuel right, or is Rav right? Right? Is it the mother and daughter-in-law, or is it the mother and daughter? We don't have to, because Shivim Panim La Torah, you can look at it different ways. Many times a certain view becomes more acceptable, which is the mother and daughter issue. But if someone comes today and says, oh, it's the mother and daughter-in-law, do you say, oh, they're a Shegit? Of course not. Right? It's a totally acceptable view. Shivim Panim La Torah, there's a big, wide range. But if someone tells you, oh, you can really light fire on Shabbat, right, because they understand, you know, differently, or the 39 malachot, which are not written in the Torah and Pshat, right, if you don't accept the Mesorah of what Lametet malachot are, then you are outside of the four L's of halakha. So, again, it's a different understanding and a different view. Okay, so Rabbi Shmuel, let's get back. Chadamar, one says, Batei Kehuna Leviya, the Chadamar Batei Malchut, which means the source that continuity of Miriam is Malchut, and that Yocheved, who had Moshe and Aaron, so she's the progenitor of Levim and Kohanim, right? So we have it here in the text, right? Umanda Amar Batei Malchut David Nami Miriam Kati, which means the Gemara, the Midrash, right, wants to really establish that what is continuity here in a real sense? Malchut for Miriam, because she did this. And Yocheved is Kuhuna and Levia. So this Midrash is really saying, right, that what is continuity through Moshe? Leviim, which means, right, this idea of Leviim can also be through the children of Moshe, because they're not Kohanim, but they have Leviim. However, how don't we view Moshe? When we think about Moshe, what don't we think about him as? As a Levi. How do we think of... How do we think about him?
A leader.
He's a teacher of Am Yisrael. Really? Moshe kibel Torah miSinai, which means Moshe is the one who really gave over the Torah. What's the first thing we teach a child once they're able to speak? Torah tziva lanu Moshe. Right? Then we add Morasha ki hilat Yaakov, right? But he is the teacher of Am Yisrael, which means the image and the legacy of Moshe is really the Torah. When Moshe was given the halakha or mitzvah, right, the command to be the leader of Am Yisrael and to take Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, Hashem said, "Tavdun et Elokim al haharazeh." You have to worship Hashem on this mount, which means his legacy is really teaching, which means that is the legacy. That is the legacy of Moshe. So why am I telling you all of this? Miriam, right, as we see, is involved in family, and her focus is family, right, getting people back together, according to the Midrash. She gets her father back together with her mother. She makes sure Moshe is going to be born, right? And as a result, what is the focus of Miriam in general, what we see in Pshat, and then we see how the Midrash develops her. It's the idea of getting families back together. It's unifying families. It's the idea of family, but not only family, of continuity. Again, Pshat, what does she make sure? Who is going to be born and sustained and to make sure he's going to be born and educated and continue in the way of the family? She makes sure Moshe is going to survive, thrive, and be educated as a Jew. What do we know about Aharon? Aharon, right, is a sibling. He is the one who is the assistant to Moshe. And what do we say about Aharon? Right, when he meets Moshe, it says, Yadati ki daber, yedaber hu. Hu yelcha lepeh, v'ata tiyelo lelokim. How is Aharon depicted when Moshe meets Aharon and they are supposed to be together? Hu yelcha lepeh. What does Moshe always say about himself? Lo yisvarim anochi, lo yisvarim anochi. I'm not a person of words. Right? So who does Hashem send to be his spokesperson? Aharon. What does it say about him? Yadaber, yadaberu. He's glib. He speaks. Everyone loves the way he speaks, right? He's very engaging, right? So we have mouth with Miriam, right? We have mouth with Aharon. Daber, yadaberu. Hu yelcha lepeh. And yet, what do we know? Who is the one who really gives over Dvar Hashem on a constant, you know, on a constant basis from Hashem to Am Yisrael? It's Moshe. So Moshe also is the one who uses his mouth. So on one sense, when Moshe says, Lo ish dvarim anochi, is it possible that Moshe is not really a spokesperson? He doesn't speak? He's the one who's giving over always Dvar Hashem. But Moshe, right, speaks about himself as Lo ish dvarim anochi, kvad peh ukvad lashon. How can we explain it if we don't want to explain, according to the views, that he had a speech impediment? What can we say for Lo ish dvarim anochi for Moshe? Or kvad peh ukvad lashon anochi? What could be an alternative explanation? I guess within the context that we're discussing. What? He's humble, so he doesn't like speaking. He doesn't think of himself as an eloquent speaker. Let's go along those lines. And what we know about Moshe in general. What could it mean?
Lacks the confidence?
Lacks the confidence? I think Moshe is a very confident person, right? Yeah. Okay, he's modest, he's taciturn, but let's go harder. What's kvad peh? No, we're saying if he doesn't stutter. What? He's harsh. He's not subtle. He's harsh. Kvad peh kvad lashon. What do we know about Aharon? Daber yedaberhu. He's ohev shalom, rodev shalom, ohev etabriyot. What does the Midrash say about him? He knows how to speak to one person, to get them involved, to pull them in, that they will feel good. When it came to the Egel, what couldn't Aharon say?
No.
No. What could Moshe say if he was in that situation? He could say no. Right? And that's part of the material that we have to understand about Aharon. He wants to be more conciliatory. So, but as opposed to Aharon, right, what are Miriam and Moshe? Straightforward, say what they think. So, kvad pen, kvad lashon, lo ish dvarim anochi, could be, he's not tactful, he says what he thinks, which means he's not glib, right? And people don't like that. Where do we see that Moshe had an experience that they didn't like his direct speech? Where did we have the experience that people didn't like his direct speech and he was very upset about that? Okay, but they are upset that he spoke to Paro and makes things worse. I even want to go earlier. What's the first thing we see about Moshe?
When he spoke to the two Jews that were fighting in the camp.
Okay. The first time we see Moshe coming on the scene, right, he sees the difficulty of his brothers, right? Vayar besiv lotam, vayar ish mitri makeh ish ivri mechav. He sees an Egyptian, right, hurting, right, and threatening or almost killing, right, a Jew. So what, in Hebrew, right? So what does he do? Vayachet ha-mitzri vayitmaneu b'chol. He kills the Mitzri and he hides him in the sand. I have to tell you this great Midrash, which you all know. What does Rashi say? How did he kill him?
By his mouth.
By his mouth, b'shem ha-meforash. Why does Rashi bring that in? Why is it so important for Rashi to tell you he didn't strike him with his hand, but b'shem ha-meforash, with God's name? Because what does Rashi want to say? What can Moshe do? He can kill people with his mouth. He has the name of Hashem on his mouth so harsh that Moshe can even kill a person with his mouth. Which means he's so high level, which means his mouth can utter unbelievable things like that. And yet, when he sees two Jews fighting, right, what does he say? Lama takereyecha, when he speaks, right, he tries to do it in that kind of eloquent way. And what's the response? Rasha, lama takereyecha. Sorry, is that better, right? Rasha, evil person, lama takereyecha. So we see he's not tactful, right? He says, evil person, why are you killing your friend, right? And what do they answer?
Who are you?
Misamcha le'ishtar v'shofet aleinu halahargeni ata omer kasher harakta tamitri. Right? And that's where the Midrash comes from. Are you going to kill me, Omer? Meaning, are you going to say, kill me? Meaning, just kill me with your mouth like you killed the Mitzri? I mean, that's the source of the Midrash. You can explain it also. Are you saying you're going to kill me like you killed the Mitzri, the Egyptian? What's the point here? Which means, Moshe, when he's speaking to Am Yisrael, his first time out trying to save and be conciliatory, trying to do the right thing, he was rebuffed. Right? He was rebuffed. And what's fascinating is that Moshe has great power with his pen. But what is his strength? Tochacha, direct speech. Why does Hashem pick Moshe to give the Torah and not Aaron? If Aaron's such a great person on such a high level and he's
Aaron
so glib. What?
Aaron compromises.
Maybe compromises. Maybe, right, he would be too conciliatory or not give Hashem direct message the way it's supposed to be given. But what will Moshe do? Peh el peh adaber bo. Right? Which means Moshe will give Hashem's message directly, as it was given. And that's why every time when Aharon does it, says, he does it, kasher tiva Hashem et Moshe, kasher tiva Hashem et Moshe, which means, keinasa Aharon, keinasa Aharon, which means we want to emphasize, Aharon is doing as Hashem commanded, shaloshina. What do you mean, shaloshina? Of course he's not going to change. We just did this in Parshas Baalotcha. Of course he's not going to change. Which means, would we ever think of saying that with Moshe? Never. Not because Aaron Chas V'Shalom is not going to do Dvar Hashem, right? But his whole idea was to be conciliatory, to try to find a way to make things work. Which means many times it's for a good cause, right? But what did we see when he tried to maneuver at the Egel, right? It didn't work.
Well, I'm just thinking that maybe that's why Aaron was punished with his children dying when they tried to change the word of Hashem and do it differently. Because this was a lesson that he gave over to his children. You don't have to follow God's words exactly. You sort of get the gist of it.
No, and, I think he did teach them to go directly, but maybe they didn't understand some of his actions. Right? We have the same thing with Leah and Dinah, which means the parent is doing the right thing, but you have to really give over the message and explain what you're doing in a real way, because kids sometimes see things and don't understand it in the right way. Do you understand? Right. No, but Aaron was an amazing person. But the question is, why was he skipped over? I mean, why pick Moshe, who's a younger sibling, right, and who's not eloquent, right? Why pick him to be this leader? Okay, so we did this whole...
Moshe had to be raised in Pharaoh's court so that he would be raised free. I mean, we all know that, so it's not just... The leader of the Jewish people could not have been raised as a slave.
Okay, so you're saying that is an element as well. Yeah, I don't want to get into that right now, but right, it's a very interesting point, but also that's why we have this famous idea that the Levim also were not enslaved.
Paradigmatically, the choice throughout the Torah continually acknowledges the idea of the elder and continually chooses the younger, always, right throughout the story. And it seems to me that is a kind of a foreshadowing or a symbolization of Israel's status among the nations, right? We're the smaller, we're the younger, and yet we are the chosen. So similarly, Moshe was the smaller, the younger, and yet he's the chosen.
Okay.
I'm just thinking about Moshe. Hashem saying, okay, Moshe is going to be a leader. And that being a parent, right? And as a parent, you have to have two sides. Where they're in a home, where there's one can be seen as being the one who gives justice, who disciplines, but you also need the other aspect of someone who's, you know, show more love and gentle and stuff like that. So in working together, they're parent.
Oh, yeah. Aaron definitely is the more mother.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Isn't there also an interesting thing that Moshe Rabbeinu had the face of a Messiah?
Yeah.
No, which is very interesting. In
right.
The respect that you have to work on.
I don't like that one, but yeah, there is that one.
Yeah,
no.
I and one of the things was that he looked very direct and he looked harder in his way of speaking.
But, you know, that's the thing that Stephen might not have been so good. It was the accent.
Yeah, well, that some of the Mefarshim do say that. So we have the view of the Rashban. Okay. Let's get right. Okay, now we're going to focus back. I want to go all the way to 16. Okay, we're going to 16. Because I want to get to the Midrash. Okay, we're at 16. We're continuing in the Gemara. But this is the Gemara in Ta'anit, right? Again, so we're setting a paradigm. What are we setting? Mouth is very important for all these three siblings. On the one hand, Miriam, her hallmark is her mouth, speaking directly. Moshe, his hallmark is speaking directly. Aharon, his hallmark is speaking, but in a more conciliatory way, because we have a very famous Midrash which asks, right, in the beginning of Sefer Shemot, who's missing in the whole narrative? We have Miriam, the sister. We have Moshe being born. But who's not really mentioned? Aharon, right? Aharon is not mentioned as a sibling yet. We only find out about him later on when Moshe says, send my brother instead, and he meets Aharon. So we have the idea that mouth is representative of each one. But we also have another idea of what each one represents. And that's in 16, the Talmud Bavli, Masechet Ta'anit, Daf Tet, Amud Aleph, number 16. Right? And we all know this. There are three great leaders for Am Yisrael, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, and for each one, a special gift was given, right? The Be'er, the Anan, and the Man. And also, what is very interesting here, even though we say the leaders in the order of Moshe, Aharon, and Miriam, what's the order that we mention the gifts, right? We mention the Be'er first. We mention Miriam's gift first, right? The Be'er is in the Zchut of Miriam, right? So water is in the Zchut of Miriam, and why would the Midrash even come to this idea that the water is in the zchut of Miriam? Because what happens when she dies? They don't have any more water. In Chukat, right? In Bamidbar, in Chukat, when Miriam dies, Bnei Yisrael complain right away about water. So the connection is, b'chut parshiot, that in her zchut is the water. Amud Anan, because the Kanaanim come to fight against Bnei Yisrael right when Aharon dies. So it must be that the Amud Anan disappeared. And the man is b'chut Moshe. Right? The man is b'schut Moshe. The mana is in the schut of Moshe. Because the Meita Miriam, when Miriam dies, b'stalek ha-be'er, no more be'er. Right? When Aharon dies, the ananim are not there and the enemy comes to attack. And when Moshe dies, they're about to enter Eretz Yisrael. And what happens? In Eretz Yisrael, they don't have man anymore. So not only do we have that each one is a hallmark of a mouth, each one, according to the Midrash, has a special gift. And what's fascinating about the idea of Be'er is that what is Be'er, what does water always symbolize for us?
Life,
future, right? And it also always really suggests to us Torah, right? We always talk about Mayim Chayim, Be'er Mayim Chayim, Mayim is Torah. And the Sfat Emet, the Gera Rebbe, says something very interesting. He says that Miriam represents Mayim, and she represents mouth. So Torah and mouth is what? Torah Sheba'al Peh. Very interesting. So the Gera Rebbe says, the Sfat Emet, says that she represents this idea of Besorah, which is very fascinating because really women are not Chayiv in Talmud Torah. But this idea of thinking about the future, of giving over, right? So he says that's what Miriam represents, this idea of purity of mouth and this idea of giving over Besorah and Torah. And even the Chatam Sofer, the Chatam Sofer, also continues this idea. Also mentions this idea of Torah Sheba'al Peh being represented with water, because a water, a well, is very deep. What's the idea of Torah Sheba'al Peh, tradition? It's that you have to really go very deep to get this tradition in and bring it out. Now we're going to put all these different pieces together. I just want to make one other comment, as the Torah Tzvima has this beautiful idea, also with we talked about water. He says water also represents mikvah, right? Water also represents mikvah. Mikvah represents family, right? Miriam is always involved in getting families back together. But something else, what's the only way to be successful in a mikvah? When you go in completely, right? In Shirat HaBe'er, right, when we talk about the Be'er that came to them after Miriam died, right? They needed some kind of water to go along with them. And it's a Shirat HaBe'er. The Torah Tamima says, right, that it really was also Bitzchut the women in general, not just Miriam. So again, we have this idea always when we have one woman representing something, it also was seen as representing women in general. Why? Because women represent the environment that you're all in. We represent the home, we represent the community. So even he says, if we're not involved in learning per se, right, but what do we really create? The environment. So if we create an environment, if we really create a total environment, then we really create the atmosphere in which others can become great. So even in an enabling capacity, this idea is that we promote Torah Shebaal Peh and all these different things, because it's the environment. And what kind of environment does a mikveh have to be? Complete. Which means you have to be immersed in it completely. And that's a beautiful idea that the Torah to be said. So even this idea of Miriam really reflects about the women in general, right? And it's something also that is a message for us today. So now I want to go into the text itself. We have a half hour, and we're going to do number 19 and on, which means we're going to go to Bamidbar Perek Aleph. So with everything that I gave, that's why I did this as an introduction for us to read this material in this fashion. Vayishma Moshe, what is happening in Perek Aleph? Perek Aleph in Bamidbar is happening after Bnei Yisrael leave Har Sinai. They had enough of Har Sinai, right? And they want to leave Har Sinai. And the minute they leave Har Sinai, right? We have a famous midrash, like kids who are leaving school. They're so excited to get out. Why would they want to be excited to get out? Wouldn't you want to stay at Har Sinai? Wouldn't you want to stay, right, at the mountain where you received the Torah at such a high spiritual level? Bnei Yisrael couldn't take it anymore. Which means it was such a high spiritual level, but they just couldn't maintain that level of spirituality. They just had to leave. It was just too intense. But when they leave, the minute they leave, they complain. The minute they leave in Perek Aleph, they're complaining. So when Moshe is complaining now to Hashem, it's only because Bnei Israel are complaining several times. Meaning they leave Har Sinai. What was Moshe's job? To bring in the Har Sinai and give them the Torah. So when Bnei Israel are complaining and want to leave Har Sinai, what is Moshe feeling? They're rejecting everything that he represents to them, right? And what was his job? Really, if you look carefully, it says that really Moshe should give them the Torah. It never really says in the Pshat that also your job is to bring them into Eretz Yisrael. Hashem says, I will take them into Eretz Yisrael. But Moshe's job specifically is to give them the Torah, right? And to lead them out of Eretz Mitzrayim. Vayishma Moshe et ha'am bochel lemishpachotav. What's happening? Here all the families are crying. Bochel lemishpachotav. Till now, what does the Midrash always say earlier and later about the women? Usually they were not the complainers. Usually they were not the ones who were complaining. And all of a sudden now, what's the language that's used? Bochel lemishpachotav. The men and women are complaining. Which means we never had the families complaining. Right? So we know women did not participate in the Egel, women did not participate later in Chet HaMeraglim, which happened after this little piece. Right? But here it's very disconcerting to Moshe, which means that's the linchpin. Why all of a sudden after this does Moshe be upset? Right? Because the women were always the linchpin of unity, of the idea of looking ahead, of being foresighted. Right? All of a sudden here the Bochel HaMishpachotav, we don't have this phrase used before. Right? So this is very upsetting. Ish lefetach ohalo, right? But who are the ones who are doing the main complaining? Ish lefetach ohalo. It's still the men who are standing in front and complaining. Vayichar af Hashem me'od, right? Ube'inei Moshe ra. This is the first time after coming out of Mitzrayim, right, that we had this kind of behavior. We had it at the Egel, right, which was taken care of, but we understand that. Why? Moshe wasn't coming down yet. Maybe Bnei Yisrael panicked. Maybe there was some kind of reason for it, even though it's a very difficult parsha. But it's the first time after the Egel, after the reconciliation, right? They're at Har Sinai. They learned all the halachot, right? They set up the Kohanim and Levi'im, and Bnei Yisrael are complaining. But they're complaining in a way that is really upsetting to Hashem and Moshe. So it's the first time we come back to this kind of negative language after we had the Egel. So we have at Mitzrayim, how Bnei Yisrael are being oppressed by the Mitzrayim. We have the language at Har Sinai, at the Egel, but then we have a reconciliation, a rapprochement between Hashem and Am Yisrael, and then we have this. It's the first time after that reconciliation that we have this kind of attitude. And why is this different? Because this is after Moshe already taught them the Torah. What could you say at the Egel? Just the Aseret HaDibrot were said, but they didn't learn Torah yet. What have they been doing at Har Sinai for such a long time now? Learning the Torah. So Moshe is giving over the Torah, and Moshe sees it as a rejection of himself and of the Torah. We know in the beginning of Perek Yudalef, very good point, not here necessarily, but a little earlier, v'ha'asafsuf asher b'kirbo. The Erev Rav, who are among Am Yisrael, they're the ones who instigate B'nai Yisrael to want the meat. So the fact that it's not used here, that we use the phrase asafsuf here, is what's so disappointing to Moshe, which means it's B'nai Yisrael complaining. We don't say the asafsuf or the Erev Rav or other people, which we do have in the Smichut Parshiyot here, so that's a very good point. Right, well, many times when Hashem's angry at B'nai Israel, he's called Ba'am, the nation. Right? Lech red ki shichet amcha, your nation.
Amcha, I heard another, side could be amcha, the nation you took out.
Right, that's Rashi for you, the Asaf Suf. Right, I didn't want to take them out. Right. But we also have, even there in the Egel, we have also the language of Am used for Am Israel. But you're right. Right? That's not a linchpin for here, so that's a good point as well. What does Moshe say? Right? He says, Lama harei ota la'avdecha, we're in Pasuk Yudalef, v'lo matzati chen be'enecha, lasum masa kol ha'am hazeh alai. Which means, what does Moshe feel here? Alone. Everything is on me. Right? I have this huge responsibility. Pasuk Yudbet, did I give birth to them? Right? Was I pregnant with them? That you said a lie. They told me that I have to hold them alone. Didn't we just say, right, and don't we know that Miriam and Aharon were assistants to Moshe? Didn't Hashem say, right, take Aharon with you, Daber Yidaber, who doesn't Aharon go with him all the time to represent Am Yisrael to the leaders? But, right, at this point, how did we split the roles? Moshe was teaching B'nai Yisrael, but Aharon was the one who was working more in the Mishkan, bringing the Korbanot. Which means right now, Moshe is more in this position to give tochacha and to lead Am Yisrael. And he says, me'ayin li basar, how will I have basar, which means the language that that's used here, laset is called, for me to carry all of the nation, right? Im kacha tosali hargeni nara, kill me, right? Ve'al ered berati, I can't see in the evil that's going to befall me, which means the language that we see here when Moshe is disappointed, right, is that he's alone. The language that I am responsible for everyone alone. But what is the other point that we are going to emphasize? What did Moshe have to do in order to be the leader of all Am Yisrael? Who do we know comes back to visit him right before he receives the Torah?
Yitro.
Yitro, with whom does he come?
Zipporah.
With Zipporah and?
The boys.
His two sons. Which means, at some point, Zipporah and the two sons, Gershom and Eliezer, are on their way to Mitzrayim. And there are different Mefarshim. Either they got to Mitzrayim and then they had to go back, or they never even went to Mitzrayim. What did Moshe have to give up in order to be the leader of Am Yisrael and give them the Torah? His family. Which means Moshe had to give up his family in order to give the Torah. And who became his family? B'nai Yisrael. And now, who are rejecting him? Am Yisrael. Which means, right now, at least till now, so what was his role? To be the leader and parent for Am Yisrael. But what is happening here? Right? B'nai Yisrael rejecting him. We don't want the Torah. Meaning they're complaining about Man, they're complaining about why did you take us from Mitzrayim, right? We want to go back to Mitzrayim. We remember all the meat that we ate there, right? We want something different, right? They were at Har Sinai. They want to leave Har Sinai, which means everything that Moshe stood for, right, and that he sacrificed for Am Yisrael is now in the balance, which means there's no reason for him to live anymore because he feels that he's not successful in his leadership, right, of Am Yisrael, because what did he already give over mostly already? Most of the Torah and the mitzvot, right? And he gave up his family for that. And now B'nai Yisrael are rejecting him. Ah, and when he says he's alone, is he saying that Miriam and Aaron are not helping him? What is fascinating about Moshe, right, that's different than all of Sefer Bereishit? For the first time, we have siblings that really love each other and care about each other and work together. All of Sefer Bereishit is about rejecting one sibling, right, and always rejecting the older sibling, right, for someone else, and there's always tension. All of Sefer Bereishit is full of tension. The first time that we see siblings really loving each other and working together and caring about each other is Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. So do we see a breakdown now in that? Is that what's happening here? Right? Is Moshe saying, oh, I'm all alone, Miriam and Aaron are not helping me? Right? Or when Hashem tells him, take 70 elders, right? We're on page 7 now, right? When Hashem says, oh, you feel all alone? Right? Gather 70 elders that they're going to help you. V'hityatfu sham. What's the main word that Hashem is telling him in Pasuk Tet Zayin? What's the last word? Imach. Right? V'hityatfu sham imach. It just happens to be female here in the Tanakh. Right? Sorry, I don't have nekudot. What is the idea of with you? What is Moshe saying about himself? I'm all alone, I'm all alone, I'm alone. So what is Hashem telling him? Right? The Shivim Zakenim are going to stand with you. And I'm going to come down and I'm going to speak with you there. V'nasu itcha b'masa. Pasuk Yudzayin. They're going to help you. V'lo tisa ata levadecha. Which means what happened? Moshe feels that he's all alone. Is it that Miriam and Aaron rejected him? Is that really what it's about? Right? What else do we know about Moshe? He is really all alone. What did he sacrifice in order to give the Torah? When he comes down from Har Sinai, what happened to him? Karan or Panav. His face was lit up. His face shone. And where did he live? Michutz l'machaneh, in a separate tent. Which means Moshe is really alone. Not only, right, is he giving the Torah, not only is he a leader of Am Yisrael, but he also had to live separately from Am Yisrael in the Ohel Moed. He had to really be removed. And what else does he wear on his face?
A veil.
A veil. So this idea of being separate and removed, he sacrificed so much for Am Yisrael. And what else are we going to see in this whole issue? What else clearly did he have to sacrifice? His children and his wife. That is what is happening here in our parasha. So this idea of sacrificing so much, so at least if Bnei Israel were seeing him as a leader, really followed him, then all the sacrifice is worth it, right? Because he really transformed himself into the parent of Am Yisrael, right? But to be rejected by your kids, right, is the worst kind of rejection that we can have. I'll take questions. I just want to finish this, and I will take questions. So what happens in Bamidbar Perek Yud Aleph, right? Moshe goes out to speak the words of Hashem. The 70 people come, and God comes down, right? And then they had Nivuah. What happens in Pasuk Kavav? We're number 20, page 7, Pasuk Kavav. Vayisharu shnei anashim b'machane. Two people who were on the list stayed in the camp. One's name was Eldad, one's name is Medad, and Ruach Hashem was on them. Right? Pasuk Kav Zayin, Vayarat Hana'ar, the young man comes and runs to Moshe and says, Eldad and Medad are having Nevuah in the camp. Right? The young man runs to Moshe and he says, Eldad and Medad are having Nevuah in the camp. We did Hagar and he's the Na'ar. We did Moshe and he's the Na'ar. So usually when we talk about Na'ar, Al Tishlach Yadcha El Hana'ar. So when usually we discuss Hana'ar, Hana'ar, usually what do we mean? A person's
son.
Child or son. So even in the pshat that this young man is running to Moshe to give him news, and I gave you the Rashi here. What is so fascinating and heart-wrenching about this Rashi? Who is running from the family camp to tell Moshe that Eldad and Medad are having Nevuah in the family camp and they didn't come to Ohel Moed? According to Rashi, who is it? Gershom ben Moshe Haya. Look at 21. Vayavatanar. Who's telling Moshe the news from the family camp that Eldad and Medad are having Nevuah in the camp? Gershom ben Moshe. Right? And again, what is Rashi bringing in for us? The Midrash, that's not Pshat, but we can see the very strong emphasis in the Pshat, because what do we know about Na'ar usually means? Son, right? So the son is coming to tell Moshe that Eldad and Medad are having Nevuah in the camp. That means, where is Gershom? Where is his son? Not with Moshe. But who is with Moshe? Vayan Yoshua binun misharet Moshe bibachurav. Who's hanging out with Moshe? From a young age, being groomed to be the next leader of Am Yisrael, Yehoshua. What did we say was the most important thing that the Midrash said happened to Miriam and Yocheved as a result, and Aaron included, as a result of doing Dvar Hashem? Physical continuity. Miriam's going to have David HaMelech, right? And what is Miriam going? Miriam's going to have David HaMelech. Yocheved is having Aharon and Moshe. Aharon is going to be the father of what? The Kohanim, and what are they going to have? physical, biological continuity till this very day, which we know. But what about Moshe? What's happening to Moshe's biological continuity? He's in the family camp. He's not with Moshe. Who is with Moshe? Yoshua. And from what age is Yoshua there? Mibachurav. What word is not used, which we should have used in this context? Mine urav. But we're not using mine urav because we want to contrast Gershom, the Nar, who is Moshe's son, with Yoshua. Which means, what did Moshe also have to sacrifice? Not only his family in the past, but what is he also sacrificing? His family and his biological future.
But doesn't the Levium come out of Moshe?
What?
The Levium come out of
Moshe. Also come out of Moshe. But his own children, who are Levium, what do we know in the end, who here is a Bible aficionado? What do we know in the end of Sefer Shoftim? Who helps build Pesach Micha and is involved in some shady business in the end of Sefer Shoftim? It's the grandson of Moshe. Which means we don't see that kind of great continuity from Moshe. It's so sad, right? So who is really the continuity for Moshe? It's going to be Yoshua. He really sacrificed. And that's a beautiful thing, right, that Yoshua is continuing. But what is all of Moshe's legacy? Purely what? Spiritual. Purely the Torah.
Can I say something? Going back to Vayashvahim Bati, we discussed the Huna and the Malki. Is it possible that it means he gave them continuity as family?
Also, that's a nice idea. I mean, that's not what the Midrash says, but that's a beautiful idea, which means the idea of family, 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 houses.
Which goes with Aaron and Miriam, and they have that continuity. We have a continuity of Aaron throughout the ages, and exactly how with Miriam, just between Hollywood and Jamel and anything else. We don't have that with Moshe.
Right. So what do we really understand about Moshe? Look what he gave up, right? But yet, what is he? What is Moshe's continuity? Torah tziva lanu Moshe, which means Moshe's great legacy, meaning who, when we think about Miriam, Moshe, and Aaron, who do we think is the greatest? Moshe. And what did he give us? Torah. Torah tziva lanu Moshe. Moshe kibel Torah misinai, right? When we talk about Mesorah, we talk about Moshe, right? So he did have a great legacy, but what was in the balance right here? That legacy. If Bnei Israel are not continuing and they're not interested in the Torah and they're not going to be interested in continuing the Torah and the families are crying that they don't want to continue all the laws, again, the Midrash says, but family purity, which means everything that Moshe is working for is being lost here, right? And he's all alone and he gave up everything. So now we really understand the Smichut Parshiot between these two issues, right? Let me just finish in Pasuk Kaptet, right? Number 20. Vayomer lo Moshe, Moshe says, Hamekanea tali, are you jealous for me? Right? Me ten kol am Hashem Nevi'im. I want everyone to be a Navi. Because what would be the legacy of Moshe for Am Yisrael? That everyone would be a prophet. Because what was his great legacy? Nevuah, prophecy, Dvar Hashem. So Moshe would want everyone in Bnei Israel to be prophets. Because what would that mean, in a sense? That he was successful. That he is giving over his great legacy. Lokam ke Moshe Navi od. And Hashem wants Rucho Alehem. Don't be upset that Elder Amedah are getting Nebuah in the camp. I would love all of Bnei Israel to get Nebuah, which means that would be my legacy to them. So Moshe didn't give us all Nebuah, but what do we have? Torah Moshe, the word of Hashem. The only way we could get that is through Moshe. So Moshe is successful in his legacy. He's the most successful on one hand. But who doesn't think he's the most successful? Miriam. Because what does Miriam want for him? Family. What's so important for Miriam? Family. What's so important for her? Husband and wife getting back together. So for her, what's the most horrible thing? Right? That he's separated from his wife. Right? For her, what's the most horrible thing? Who is not being educated by Moshe and there's no continuity?
Gershom.
She wants Gershom to be in the tent with Moshe, not Yehoshua. Right? So what is she most upset about? That Moshe divorced his wife, that he's separated from his wife, that he's in the Ohel Moed, which means, because to her, that's the most important thing. Because what is she thinking? I have continuity. Aaron has continuity. We also have Nevuah. We're also important people, and it's working for us. And again, what is truly the message in all of Tanakh in general when we talk about great people? What should they always be? Great parents. Which means in every other situation, Shmuel. When Shmuel, right, does not really educate his kids in the right way, and that's why they can't continue after, we're upset, and the Tanakh has written that it's upset. with Eli. When Eli does not chastise his sons, we're upset. When David doesn't really educate his sons in the right way and doesn't criticize them, we're upset. Which means in all of Tanakh, we're upset when you're not a great parent. We're upset when you're not involved with your children. You can't be a great leader unless you're a great parent. Right? That's a flaw. And what is Miriam seeing? That's what Miriam is seeing. Which means that is important to her, and Moshe can't be a great parent without that. But what is Hashem saying is so unusual about Moshe that we don't do in any other case? For Moshe, what did he have to sacrifice, which is unusual, and that's why Miriam can't even understand it. He had to sacrifice his personal family, because what did he have to become?
Leader.
The leader of Am Yisrael, and the parent of Am Yisrael, that he cared first about Am Yisrael, right? And they would be his first priority. Because at one point in Am Yisrael, to get the Torah, to get that kind of change, to transform us into a nation, Moshe had to be the parent figure, right? And he had to be that kind of liaison between Hashem and Am Yisrael, for them to understand that Hashem is really like our father. Now, we don't have that often, and we don't want that more, because the way people understand their role models is, if you're not a good parent, you're going to be a great leader, you can tell us what to do, you can't even educate your own children. We don't want people to sacrifice family for great leadership, right? But Moshe was unusual. And what didn't Miriam and Aaron really understand about Moshe? That sacrifice that has to be made. And that's why it's unusual. Right, which means there always has to be something that gives, right? But with Moshe, the Tanakh, the Torah doesn't say, oh, it wasn't good. But with Shmuel, even the way the Tanakh is written, it's a criticism. Even the way Eli is written, it's a criticism. Even the way David is written, it's a criticism, which means in the Torah, what does it clearly want to tell us? That Moshe did the right thing and they're wrong for criticizing him. Whereas with the other leaders, you're right, you can't do both, but we still expect you to try, right? And we know it in real life is very hard.
And the others were
Moshe. What?
The others were not Moshe.
Right, and it wasn't
the
fair.
Israel, 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 Israel. I mean, that is unique. You can't compare Eli or Shmuel or
right, but what is real life? No, when you are involved with so many other people, right, many times you sacrifice.
But you can't say that they couldn't have done both, or they wouldn't be criticized.
No, that's what we're saying.
No.
What I'm saying is they could do both, but clearly we know in real life something has to give. Which means
you can't say that, because then you're saying they couldn't have done both. They had choices, and in some cases they made the wrong choices. There must have been an opportunity for them to do both. Otherwise, But if there is a criticism, that means in real life you could have done both. And we live in real life, and that's a lesson for us. Because we have, either whether it's ourselves who are at work or our husbands who are at work, there's pressures on us. And we can't say, well, look in the Torah. They had realized then they couldn't do both, and they were so greater than us. So no wonder we can't do both. That we can't have that. That's not true. We have to be able to do both. We have to find a way. And only Moshe is accepted from that rule.
That's exactly what I said.
That's exactly, but
that's okay. All I'm saying is, in real life, right, you know that Shmuel made choices. Not that Shmuel is a bad person. In real life, to be a great leader, he made choices, and that's what happened.
So what is the point or the purpose of Zipporah and the family if Moshe had to have a divorce?
Okay, so we're going to try to wrap that up right now.
Okay.
Good point. Yes. Right, well, later, meaning originally, right, because he went at, meaning he was in Midian,
right.
But then she converts, meaning she is part of Am Yisrael.
She's the one who makes him do a bris on his kid.
Right.
She's very
good. Okay. I just want to finish this up because we only have a few minutes and I really want to tie this all up. So, we understand the Smichut Parshiyot. So, let's go to Smichut Parshiyot, which means after this happens, right, what is the smichut parshiot? Vatedaber Miriam v'Aaron b'Moshe al odot ha'isha kushit asher lakach ki isha kushit lakach. Why is there smichut parshiot right after the Shivim Zakenim and right after Moshe says, right, about the nevuah of Eldar Medad, that we have Miriam and Aaron speaking about Moshe, right? What could we say? Maybe they're jealous, right, that he had to take Shivim Zakenim and he's not relying on them anymore, right? But what do they focus on? They don't say, oh, Moshe took Shivim Zakenim and he's not involved with us anymore, he's not relying on us. But to daber Miriam v'Aaron b'Moshe al odot ha'isha kushit asher lakach ki isha kushit lakach, right? Miriam and Aaron are speaking about Moshe. So number one, who is the initiator here?
Miriam.
Miriam is the initiator, right? But who does she speak with? She pulls in Aaron. They speak about Moshe, about the Isha Kushita Sher Lakach, right? That he took a Kushite woman. And again, we're not going to get into the whole issue of, is it talking about Tzipor and he divorced her, right? What is really all the details? But that, we're going to go with the reading, right? He took a wife, and then it just discusses that he took this Kushite wife and what is going on there. And then they say, Pasuk Bet, Vayamru Harak Ach B'Moshe Diber Hashem, Halo Gam Banu Diber Vayishma Hashem. Is Hashem just speaking to Moshe? Which means, how can we go from his marriage issue, right? Mm-hmm. Right? And then we all of a sudden speak that they say, is Hashem just speaking to Moshe, speaking to us too? Which means, how do you get from Pasuk Aleph to Bet? Which means, what's the connection? That they're saying, oh, he took this Isha Kushit. And then they say, oh, is Hashem just speaking to Moshe? He speaks to us as well. Which means, what's the connection between these two psukim? And then we go to number three. How come the Torah has to tell us, as an interjection here, that Moshe was more modest than anyone on the face of the earth? Which means, what's the connection, right, between all these things, right? And your point was very well taken, right? So let's see what is going on here. And let's see the way the Midrashim explain this idea, and we're going to go to Rashi. Rashi brings in the Midrash. We're on number 23. Vatidaber, okay? Rashi explains, Ein dibur b'chol makom el lashon kasha, meaning he's speaking harshly, right? And Miriam is speaking harshly. So what's the theme that we have here that the Midrash wants to bring in, Rashi wants to bring in, right? Whenever Miriam speaks, how does she speak? Directly, harshly, right? She says what she thinks. But Tedamir Miriam v'Aaron, right? He patcha b'dibur tchila. She spoke first, and therefore the Torah mentions her first. So now the question is, what does it mean, ki isha kushit lakach, right? Al odot ha'isha kushit asher lakach. Are they just speaking that he married this other woman, and then we don't understand the context here, why is it brought in? Or are we mentioning that he married a woman, Tzipporah, and then he divorces her? Now, how do we know that Moshe separated from his wife? Because after he got the Torah, what does the Pshat tell us? That he was an Ohel Moed, and who we know is in the Ohel with Moshe all the time? Yehoshua, right? Nar lo yamish mitocha Ohel, it says. So we know from the Pshat that Moshe is spending all of his time with Yehoshua. This is after he received the Torah and he has the Masveh on his face. So Midrash is saying, and Rashi is quoting for us, right? We know that's his theme. Right? What did she know? Rabbi Natan Omer, Miriam haita b'tzad Tzipora. Miriam was at the side of Tzipporah when Moshe, right, had the 70 elders, and Elder Medad had Nevuah in the camp, prophecy in the camp. When Tzipporah heard that Elder Medad had prophecy in the camp, right, what did she say? Oilin eshoteim shalelo. I feel bad for their wives, right? Because if the husbands are having Nevuah, they won't be with their wives as often as they should, because they always want to be ready for Hashem to speak to them. Which means, what does Nevuah do? Nevuah doesn't bring families together, it separates families, right? And all of a sudden, Miriam, right, feels bad, right? Because she hears what Tzipporah is feeling. We also have another famous Midrash, right? And this is in the Sifrei, that Miriam saw that Tzipporah wasn't getting dressed up anymore. She didn't care how she looked. She didn't wear jewelry, right? And she asked her, why aren't you wearing jewelry anymore? And she says, oh, your brother doesn't care about these kind of things anymore. Which means, right, what is, again, the Midrash trying to do? What is Miriam always interested in? Right? The family relationships, right? The husband and wife relationship. And what is upsetting Miriam, right? That Moshe is not really, you know, a good husband, right? And this is bothering. It's bothering her. So again, what does the Midrash want to say? What does it emphasize about Miriam? What is she always focused on? The relationship of husband and wife, right? The idea that there should be a good marriage, right? A good family relationship. You have to be involved with the children, right? What is happening here? So is she going to be chastised for it or not? And that's the last piece that we have to do in our last 5 minutes, which means, what do we say about Miriam? Does this undo everything about Miriam? Because she's involved with the family, right? And she's speaking to Aaron about this. Are we seeing this as a negative thing? Because we always talk about Lashon Hara Miriam, Lashon Hara Miriam, which means, what is the lesson that the Pshat, and especially the Midrash, wants to teach us? What do we say is shocking to us? Right after they say, "Vatidaber Miriam v'Aaron b'Moshe," about his wife, what's the next thing they say? "Harakach v'Moshe diber Hashem, agam banu diber." And the Midrash says something very interesting. Hashem speaks to us too, and we live regular lives, and we're good parents, right? And we don't sacrifice anything because of that, which means, how did Miriam and Aaron see that your leadership position has to be? It always has to be balanced with what? Family. If you're not going to balance it with family, it's not worth it. It's not a really great position. All of a sudden, Moshe thinks, because he's such a great leader, he's sacrificing his family, right? So what is the end of this Midrash that Rashi quotes? That's all over the place. I'm going to see how Ramban explains it. Uma Miriam shelonit kavna lignuto, kach ne'ensha, kal bachomer lamesaper bignuto shel chaviro. Which means, why is Miriam the greatest exemplar for Lashon Hara? Because what was Miriam trying to do? She was trying to fix it. She was trying to get them back together, right? She wanted to get them together as a unit, and she only meant well. And even if you mean well, but when you start speaking about something else and somebody else with, like, you know, and you really mean well, and especially with family, because that's really who we speak about the most, right? We call each other up, we're always involved, we always have advice, we always think, we're always talking. What's the next pasuk? Harakach b'Moshe diber Hashem, which means always when you start talking to someone, no matter how well-meaning you are, what's the next pasuk? Meaning, what's the next part of the conversation? I wouldn't do it. I'm much better. I don't think. I this. I that. If I was in that situation, which means, what's the best lesson for Lashon Hara? Miriam, she really meant well, and she put her money where her mouth is. She always speaks up. She says what she thinks, right? But what's the problem here? And this is the real pièce de résistance of the shiur here. In every other situation, how does Miriam speak? She confronts people directly. She gives them tochacha. She always directs the her talk and her language to the person and her message. She spoke to Paro's daughter. Boom. She speaks to Paro. If we say she's from the Mialdot, she spoke to her father directly. In every situation, she wants to say, she wrote v'tish pachot v'tan lahen Miriam. She says the Shirat Hayam, but here she speaks to Aharon about Moshe. Now we can understand this, because it's very, how can you speak to Moshe? He has a matzveh, he's your brother, he's on such a high level, but what will happen when you speak to someone else about it, about a third party? It deteriorates, right? Even Aharon, who always spoke to a third party, what would he do? He'd always speak to the parties involved. According to the Midrash, he'd speak to X about Y, and then Y about X. But what is Miriam doing? She is speaking to her brother about Moshe. Miriam, who represents direct speech, who represents tochacha, she's the greatest exemplar for us about Lashon Hara, which means, what is our biggest fault with Lashon Hara? Not that we're talking about our neighbors, we shouldn't do that either. Many times we do that. But what really do we feel we're always doing well and we're always meaning well when we speak about others? When we speak in the family and we all the siblings talk about with each other about X. Oh, we think this should be going on with X, but what is really the message here? Right? Not only we shouldn't speak negatively about other people, right? But even when you don't speak positively about other people in all ways, what's the best way to try to do it? To try to confront them directly in a positive way. We know how difficult it is. Which means even Miriam, who's great at direct speech, at this point, what did she feel? She had to go to Aaron. She couldn't confront Moshe directly. But even Miriam, that's why she's a great exemplar for us of Lashon Hara. She is a great model because she never spoke Lashon Hara. Which means not like, oh, Miriam was the biggest Lashon Hara maidel in the universe. Just the opposite, right? She really shows us that she never spoke Lashon Hara. She's the exemplar that women really don't speak Lashon Hara because they like talking about other people. Because we want to fix things. We want to make things better. But how should we use our speech? Ideally, our speech should be used directly. So here we find what's the beauty of Miriam's mouth. And that's why Ramban says, why is she the greatest exemplar of Lashon Hara? because she meant well, and she wanted to do the right thing. And the Ramban says that he even believes it should be a mitzvah aseh that we say every day. Not because she's a terrible person, because she's one of the greatest people and is the greatest example for us of Lashon Hara. I mean, you always should try to do direct speech. And when Miriam trips up, it shows us everyone is going to trip up. Not that she always used to speak Lashon Hara, which means how easy it is to trip up. Even Miriam, who always spoke directly, here she falters in a situation where she wants to do the right thing. And that's why she's such a great example to us. And that also just brings us back to our original thing, the idea of koach hanashim. There's so much positive that we could do with our language, with our speech, with our actions, within the family, within the community, within the future of Am Yisrael, to realize how strong speech is. It's Moshe's speech which gives the Torah. It's Aharon's speech, which really is his great leader and how he brings people back together. So both we want to integrate our speech, spirituality, teaching. Miriam, as we saw in the Targum Yonatan quoted by Rashi, she was the Morah, Ora Al in Ashaya. She's a teacher for the women. The women sang Shirat Hayam. We have that ability to be spiritual leaders, spiritual teachers, to teach our children, teach the community, whatever venue we have. But even on the personal, how do we use our speech? We should always use it in a positive way. Always think so much before we say something, especially in those issues which we talk all the time about, family and trying to do the right thing, at least to think positively. How can we do it in the most constructive way? Is there any way that we can really speak to the direct parties? And sometimes we surprise ourselves that when we do try to speak to the parties involved instead of other people, maybe we really will also get further ahead. And it's also very humbling, right? How do you confront somebody else? But when you speak to other people about a third party, what ends up always being, right? You always start, imagining or speaking about yourself in a certain way. And that's why Miriam really shows us, how can you be caring about other people? How do you see people beyond yourself? And how do you really use your mouth in a very constructive way? And really, all of us have our own strengths, whether it's the spirituality part of Miriam, whether it's the personal part of Miriam, whether it's the family part of Miriam, whether it's the sibling part of Miriam. We really have different areas that we can really use to really change the world around us, our kids, our families, our community, our friends, so many different ways. So just like the Gemara says here about Bizchut Nashim Tzidkaniyot, right, Nigalu Am Yisrael v'Mitzrayim, on the merit of the righteous women, B'nai Yisrael were redeemed from Mitzrayim, the Midrash on Rut, the Yalkut Shimoni on Rut quotes that Bizchut Nashim Tzidkaniyot Shebechol Dor Nigalim Am Yisrael. We have that ability for redemption, for Geula, to really change things on the most minute interpersonal level. Any little thing we do can increment and really change into big things. So that is our goal, right, to really try to emulate Miriam on many different levels, and also to learn from her actions in many different ways. Thank you. Thank you.